In 2024, there was this incredibly specific, highly complex file uploaded to the internet.
Oh, yeah. A really massive data dump, essentially.
Right, exactly. And it contained the exact mathematical blueprints used by elite institutions. We're talking places like the University of Cambridge, the Indian Institute of Science.
Heavy hitters of material science, you know.
Yeah. And these blueprints, they're used to prevent the literal steel rails under our high-speed trains from, like, slowly morphing like plastic.
It's just a terrifying thought if you actually stop to think about it.
It really is. I mean, when you look at modern infrastructure, you probably just see steel. You see permanence, you know. We all assume a bridge or a train track was just forged from the earth, solid and unchanging.
Well, that is the illusion of the macroscopic world.
Macroscopic illusion.
Exactly. We rely on those materials to be static. But if you zoom in to the atomic level, solid steel isn't finished. It's not this dead, resting thing. It is actually a frozen kinetic war zone that is constantly trying to change its state.
A frozen war zone. I love that.
Yeah, and the stability of our entire built environment, you know, the cities you walk around in, depends entirely on engineers understanding how to control that invisible war.
And to control it, you have to master the underlying physics. So, welcome to today's deep dive.
Glad to be here for this one.
We are exploring a rigorous academic curriculum authored by HKDH Padesia. It's titled Thermodynamics and Kinetics of Solid State Transformations.
Quite a mouthful, honestly.
A bit of a mouthful, yeah. But our mission today is to trace how elite material science bridges the gap between this abstract, high-level mathematical theory and the actual physical integrity of the structures you interact with every single day.
The literal ground beneath our feet, or rails, I should say.
Exactly. Okay, let's unpack this by starting with the fundamental rules of the game. We're talking thermodynamic functions and solution models.
The absolute bedrock of the whole curriculum.
Right, because we all know that alloys exist, right? We know that solids can dissolve into other solid to create stronger materials, like we mix metals.
Sure, humanity's been doing it for thousands of years.
Yeah, but computing exactly how atoms arrange themselves in a solid lattice without melting them down, that computation is where the thermodynamics get incredibly dense.
Oh, incredibly dense. It's heavy math.
So are these solution models basically just defining the absolute boundary conditions? Like, are they basically the immutable laws of physics acting as the recipe ratios before you even try to bake a cake?
Well, not exactly. It is less about strict boundaries or recipe ratios and much more about the relentless pursuit of the lowest possible energy state.
The lowest energy state. Okay.
Yeah. What's fascinating here is that the math is calculating a constant microscopic tug of war.
Between what and what?
So on one hand, you have enthalpy.
Enthalpy.
Right, which is the actual chemical bonding energy. Like when a carbon atom forces its way into the microscopic gaps between iron atoms.
It actually wedges itself in there.
Exactly. And then on the other hand, pulling in the opposite direction, you have configurational entropy.
Okay, entropy. So that's like chaos, right?
Basically, yeah. It's the natural chaotic tendency of the universe that just wants those atoms randomly distributed everywhere.
Just a total mess.
Right. So the solution models in this curriculum, they are these advanced mathematical algorithms that predict exactly what temperature and pressure will allow those competing forces to balance out.
Ah, so they find the sweet spot where the solid mixture actually stabilizes.
Yes. Exactly.
Okay, so once the thermodynamics tell us that a specific mixture of atoms is mathematically stable, we have our blueprint. We know the cake can be baked, theoretically.
Theoretically being the operative word there.
Right, because here is where the source material introduces a major hurdle. Just because the math says a specific alloy can exist at a low energy state, well, that doesn't mean it will just naturally form on its own.
No, the universe isn't always that accommodating.
Clearly, because the curriculum immediately introduces this physical process called mechanical alloying. And looking at this, I just have to ask, if we want to mix two elemental metals to reach that stable solid state, why not just throw them in a furnace and melt them together?
The old-fashioned way.
Yeah. Why rely on a process that sounds as aggressive and physical as mechanical alloying? Like, why force them?
That is a critical engineering question, actually. Melting seems like the obvious answer, right? But it is often the enemy of advanced materials.
Wait, really? How is melting the enemy?
Because when you melt certain metals together, they might form these unwanted, incredibly brittle chemical compounds as they cool down.
Oh, so they don't mix evenly.
Right, or their melting points might be so drastically different that one metal literally vaporizes before the other one even turns into a liquid.
Oh, wow. I never even thought of that. Like boiling water while the pasta is still frozen.
Exactly. So mechanical alloying bypasses the liquid phase entirely.
But how? How do you force two distinct solid metals to dissolve into each other without applying immense heat to melt them?
By using extreme continuous kinetic energy.
Okay, paint a picture for me.
Sure. So imagine a massive steel drum. And inside this drum, you've got heavy steel balls and your distinct elemental metal powders.
Just loose powder and steel cannonballs, basically.
Yes. And you rotate that drum at incredibly high speeds.
Like a giant rock tumbler on steroids.
Exactly like that. And as the heavy balls crash down, they trap the tiny powder particles between them. The impact pressure is just so severe that the distinct metal atoms are forced into a unified lattice.
They just smash together.
Right. They literally cold weld together in a fraction of a second.
Okay, but isn't that just making bigger clumps of powder?
Well, that's the trick. The next violent impact from another steel ball fractures that brand new weld.
Oh, it breaks it apart again.
Yes, which exposes fresh, highly reactive atomic surfaces. And then those new surfaces are cold welded to more particles on the next impact.
So it's this continuous, violent cycle of fracturing and cold welding.
Over and over and over again.
You are physically hammering the atoms until they literally have no choice but to share the same crystal lattice.
Exactly. You are introducing massive amounts of defects into the material. Like we're talking microscopic dislocations and grain boundaries.
And those defects are actually helpful.
Extremely helpful. All of those microscopic fractures act as high energy pathways. They allow the atoms to intermingle and dissolve into one another completely while still in the solid state.
That is wild.
It really is. It proves to the student that the thermodynamic theoretical models can be achieved, you know? But sometimes you have to violently force the issue to make the math real.
Okay, so we force the atoms to mix, and we've achieved the solid solution that the math predicted.
We have our alloy.
Right. So now the curriculum shifts to mapping out these new states through the computation of phase diagrams.
Which are crucial.
Yeah, and a phase diagram, as I understand it, is essentially the theoretical map of stability. Like, it tells you exactly what crystal structure your alloy will take at any given temperature or pressure.
That's a perfect way to describe it. It's the map.
But right next to these perfect computations, the syllabus introduces this concept called the thermodynamics of irreversible processes.
Ah, yes. The reality check.
Yeah, because this feels like a massive contradiction to me. If thermodynamics is just about calculating states of energy,
Yeah.
and we know energy is conserved, shouldn't a phase change be a perfectly reversible two-way street?
You would think so, looking at the math.
Right. If I heat an alloy up to change its microscopic structure, and then I cool it back down to the exact starting temperature, shouldn't it revert to its exact original state?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, that assumption is exactly the trap that theoretical physics often sets for practical engineering.
Oh, it's a trap.
A huge trap.
Yeah.
In a perfectly computed phase diagram, yes, the process is completely reversible. But in the physical universe, we have to deal with real-world messiness. We have to deal with entropy and energy dissipation.
So it's like computing a phase diagram is drawing a perfect theoretical map of a landscape. But the irreversible processes represent the harsh reality that you can't always drive your car backward exactly where you came.
Precisely. The map is perfect, but the actual terrain is flawed. Think about it like this. When a solid state transforms, when a new crystal structure starts growing inside the old one, it doesn't happen in a void.
It's surrounded by other atoms.
Exactly. And the new microscopic structure usually has a slightly different volume. It takes up more space, or sometimes less space.
Oh, I see. So as it grows, it's physically pushing against the stuff around it.
Yes. It is literally stretching and crushing the surrounding atomic lattice.
Yeah.
It builds up immense elastic strain inside the metal.
Like blowing up a balloon inside a tightly packed box.
Perfect analogy. And eventually, the surrounding lattice just can't take the pressure anymore, and it permanently deforms. It essentially snaps, creating a structural defect.
And I imagine that snap releases energy.
It releases heat into the surrounding material.
Okay, so energy is lost from the system.
Exactly. And once that heat dissipates, and once those permanent microscopic defects are formed, you cannot simply reverse the temperature and expect the atoms to follow the exact same path backward.
Because the terrain has literally changed.
Right. It is like folding a crisp piece of paper. You can unfold it, sure. You can return it to its original flat shape. But the crease, you know, the structural defect that is
The
permanent,
crease is always going to be there.
yeah, the energy you use to make the fold is gone. So the computation of phase diagrams gives you the ideal target. But the thermodynamics of irreversible processes forces the engineer to calculate the permanent physical toll that the transformation takes on the metal itself.
Wow. Which perfectly sets up the next major hurdle in the curriculum. Because up to this point, we've only been talking about what happens and why it's thermodynamically stable.
We've just been looking at the destination.
Right. But those phase diagrams only show us that ideal endpoint. Engineers realize that just because an alloy wants to reach a new state, well, that doesn't mean it happens fast enough to actually be useful.
Not at all.
And that realization forces the curriculum to pivot heavily from thermodynamics to kinetics. So if thermodynamics is the destination, kinetics dictates the speed of the journey.
And the how of the journey. And in solid-state transformations, understanding the speed of the journey is arguably much more important than the destination itself.
Really? More important than the final state?
Oh, absolutely. If a structural change takes 10,000 years to occur naturally, it might be perfectly thermodynamically possible.
But it's kinetically irrelevant to a human engineer.
Exactly. Yeah. We don't have 10,000 years to wait for a steel beam to harden.
Right. Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. The sources break overall transformation kinetics down into two highly specific mechanisms. We have diffusion-controlled growth, and we have interface response functions.
Two very different speeds that have to work together.
Yeah, so to try and visualize how these two speeds interact, without using an overdramatic battlefield metaphor, let's look at it mechanically. Is the interface essentially acting like a literal microscopic zipper?
A zipper. You know, that is actually a highly accurate way to look at it.
Okay, cool.
The interface is the exact boundary line where the parent crystal structure ends and the new crystal structure begins.
So if the interface is the zipper, then the interface response function must be the mathematical calculation of how fast the teeth of that zipper are actually rearranging themselves, right? Like how fast they lock into the new crystal pattern.
Yes, exactly. The interface response function dictates the velocity at which the boundary physically moves forward, atom by atom, snapping into the new configuration.
Snapping the zipper shut.
Right. But here's the catch. The zipper cannot move forward if it doesn't have the right materials fed into it.
Ah, it needs the right atoms to form the new teeth.
Exactly. And that is where diffusion-controlled growth comes in. Diffusion is basically the underlying supply chain for the zipper.
Okay, and how does that supply chain actually work in a solid piece of metal?
It is the incredibly slow process of atoms randomly vibrating and hopping into microscopic empty spaces, what we call vacancies, within the solid lattice.
Just randomly hopping around?
Yeah, just migrating blindly toward the boundary.
Okay, I see the tension here. If diffusion is just atoms randomly vibrating and hopping through a literal solid block of metal,
yeah,
that sounds agonizingly slow.
Oh, it is. It is a crawl. And that mismatch in speed between the fast zipper and the slow supply chain, that is the entire game in materials engineering.
Because they depend on each other.
Right. If the interface, your zipper, wants to move fast, but the diffusion of necessary atoms through the solid lattice is crawling, the entire transformation just chokes.
The zipper gets stuck.
Exactly. The growth is stunted. Conversely, if you rapidly quench a metal, like dropping its temperature instantly by plunging it into water or oil.
Right, like blacksmiths do in movies.
Exactly like that. When you do that, you completely kill the diffusion process. The atoms literally freeze in place before they can migrate to the interface.
Oh, wow. And by freezing them in place before they can finish moving, you trap the metal in this high-energy, incredibly hard microscopic structure.
Yes. You dictate the final physical properties of the steel by manipulating the speed of the zipper versus the speed of the atomic migration.
So you're playing them against each other.
Exactly. By computing both the slow diffusion and the rapid interface response, an engineer can meticulously control the heating and cooling cycles. They artificially design the exact microscopic architecture of the metal.
That is brilliant. But, you know, so what does this all mean for you and me? Why does calculating the speed of a microscopic atomic zipper matter to someone just riding the subway?
That is the big question.
Right. And it brings us to the culminating case studies of the curriculum. The design of creep-resistant steels, specifically applied to a module, simply flagged as Rails 2024.
Yes.
This is where all this dense theoretical math, the phase diagrams, the interface kinetics, it all has to serve a physical purpose. It's where the invisible physics meet the physical reality of modern infrastructure.
It is the absolute ultimate test of the science. Remember we mentioned earlier that solid steel is a frozen kinetic war zone?
The macroscopic illusion.
Right. Well, when we say a material experiences creep, we mean that the kinetic war never truly stopped.
Wait, really? Even when the metal looks completely solid and finished to the naked eye, like a train track just sitting there.
Correct. Even then, when you place a piece of steel under immense continuous mechanical stress, say a high-speed train driving over it constantly, and you simultaneously expose it to the high temperatures of friction from those wheels.
Okay, heat and pressure.
Yes. The atoms inside that solid lattice slowly begin to migrate again. Those microscopic defects we talked about earlier, the dislocations and the creases, they start to slowly slide through the crystal structure.
Oh no! So the zipper starts moving again, completely against our will.
Yes. The kinetic journey resumes. And over years of continuous use, that slow microscopic migration causes the entire solid block of metal to physically deform.
It actually changes shape.
It stretches. It warps. In the context of the 2024 railway module, if you have a high-speed train weighing hundreds of tons repeatedly, violently impacting a steel rail, and that rail is susceptible to creep, the steel will slowly flatten out and warp.
And then the microscopic failure becomes a macroscopic catastrophe.
Exactly. The rail buckles under the pressure.
And the high-speed train derails.
Which is exactly why the thermodynamics and kinetics must be perfectly calculated long before the steel is ever poured at the foundry.
So how do they stop it? How do you make a steel creep-resistant?
Creep-resistant steels are meticulously engineered using the exact mathematical models in this curriculum to lock those microscopic dislocations in place permanently.
Does it jam the zipper?
They jam it hard. Engineers use the solid-state solution models to introduce very specific alloy atoms that act like microscopic roadblocks. They intentionally jam the lattice so the defects simply cannot slide, and the zipper cannot move no matter how much heat and pressure the train applies.
Wow. They literally use the math to permanently win the kinetic war.
That's exactly what they do.
It is incredible to trace that path. We start with pure, abstract computations of entropy and enthalpy, and we end up with a physical formula that prevents heavy industry and public transportation from literally collapsing under their own weight.
It's a beautiful application of theory.
It really is. But looking at the source materials for this curriculum, there's another layer to this story that is honestly just as compelling as the physics themselves.
You're talking about the distribution model.
Yes, the metadata.
Yeah.
We have the timeline of exactly how this knowledge is being distributed to the world right now.
And that distribution model is a massive, significant departure from traditional academia.
Yeah. I mean, we are looking at course material developed by an author affiliated with the Indian Institute of Science, Queen Mary University of London, and Cambridge. But it isn't locked behind massive tuition walls.
Not at all.
The sources show it is offered as a free book and under an open-source CCBY license. And the timeline we're looking at is just relentless.
Like, expanding constantly.
Right. There's a 2020 translation that gets published in 2021. Then, suddenly, there are audio summaries released in 2024. Then, photographs integrated in 2025. And video summaries extending all the way into 2026.
It just keeps evolving.
Exactly. Looking at this multi-year, multi-format timeline, what does that say about how elite institutions are treating this specific curricula?
Well, this raises an important question about the democratization of advanced engineering.
Democratization, right?
Yeah, because historically, understanding the precise interface response functions required to design, say, creep-resistant steel that was highly gated knowledge.
You had to be on the inside.
Right. It was heavily restricted to those who had the financial means and the geographical ability to physically sit in a lecture hall in Cambridge or Bangalore.
Paying tens of thousands in tuition.
Exactly. But the CCBY license fundamentally dismantles that barrier. It dictates that anyone, anywhere, can legally download the material. They can translate it, record audio versions of it, adapt it into video formats, provided they give appropriate credit.
Which perfectly explains why the timeline keeps growing year after year.
Exactly.
It isn't just a dusty, static textbook written back in 2020. The open source nature means the global community of engineers and students are actively taking the material and translating it into whatever medium serves their specific learning environment best.
Whether that's an audio file in 2024 or a full video breakdown in 2026.
Right. It's a living ecosystem.
It allows a student in a developing nation with literally nothing more than a basic internet connection to access the exact same rigorous thermodynamic baseline models as an elite university student.
The playing field is leveled.
Completely. They can learn how to compute the irreversible thermodynamic processes and engineer structural alloys using the exact same math that built the high-speed rails of 2024.
That is just so cool. It turns a static elite syllabus into a globally accessible, living ecosystem of applied physics.
It really redefines what a classroom is capable of being.
It absolutely does. So let's just step back and look at the terrain we've covered today.
We covered a lot of ground.
We really did. We started by looking past the macroscopic illusion of solid metal. We unpacked the dense mathematical solution models that calculate that microscopic tug of war between enthalpy and entropy.
And then we saw how processes like mechanical alloying physically force those theoretical models into reality through basically violent repetitive cold welding.
The giant rock tumbler.
Exactly.
And from there, we explored the inherent tension between the perfect theoretical computations of phase diagrams and the messy permanent defects created by the thermodynamics of irreversible processes.
The folded paper crease that you can never truly undo.
Right, the terrain changing permanently. And we tracked the mismatch in speeds between the slow random walk of atomic diffusion and the rapid snapping zipper of interface kinetics.
The supply chain versus the zipper.
Yeah. And we saw how computing those exact speeds is literally the only way engineers can design creep-resistant steels, materials that can actually hold the physical weight of modern infrastructure without microscopically warping over time and causing a disaster.
And perhaps most importantly, we saw how that life-saving mathematical knowledge has been entirely ungated. It's been pushed out to the world through a constantly expanding open source timeline of audio, video, and text.
It really is a profound reminder for you, the listener, as you move to the world today, that the physical permanence you see around you is mostly an illusion. The bridges you drive over, the skyscrapers you work in, the steel rails you ride on, they're all active, microscopic battlegrounds.
A frozen war.
Right, and they're meticulously stabilized by these invisible laws of thermodynamics and kinetics. And the coolest part is that those laws are no longer hidden away in ivory towers. They're being actively unpacked and freely shared by generous educators across the entire globe.
It's an amazing shift in how we share knowledge.
It truly is. Which leaves us with one final thought for you to mull over as we conclude today's deep dive. If a subject as immensely complex, highly technical, and industrially vital as the kinetics of solid-state transformations can be completely open-sourced, continuously updated, and freely distributed in multiple languages and media formats, what other highly gated elite fields of knowledge are out there right now, just on the verge of being freely unpacked for anyone with an internet connection?